This week on the eBay for Business podcast.
Sellers who don't have an opportunity on hand and don't have a product to sell might also use Terapeak to help them figure out what they should source to help them ensure that they're sourcing and listing products that buyers want going forward.
Even in school, my favorite subjects were music and art, and I always considered myself a creative. And I would avoid classes like business and politics, and I never thought of myself as a business person. So if you had told me back then that I would have been an entrepreneur, I was very shocked. However, one thing I've learned from that is that being an entrepreneur requires creativity, and business is creative, and it requires a resilience that oftentimes you have to think on your feet, and that is creativity. So that surprised me in being able to find that in myself.
I'm Rebecca Michaels, your new co-host for this week.
And I'm Griff, and this is the eBay for Business podcast, your weekly source for the information and inspiration you need to start and run and grow a business on the world's most powerful marketplace. And this is episode 99. Hello, Rebecca.
Hi, Griff. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are things up in San Francisco?
Cold and windy, as is a usual San Francisco summer.
Right. I think it was Mark Twain who said the coldest winter he ever spent was a summer in San Francisco.
Exactly.
Well, we're glad you can join us. Brian is still out. He'll be back with us next week. And I'm so happy that you've agreed to fill in for Brian.
Well, you know, Griff, I had so much fun the last time that I came on. I thought I'd try to become a regular. How do you feel about that?
I actually think that's a great idea. Let's talk about that. I don't think Brian will mind. We'll do a trade-off. How about every other week?
Great. This will be a fun surprise for him when he gets back from vacation.
Brian, no, we're not trying to push you out. We just want to, like, you know, make it more of a variety.
Mix it up a little bit.
Yes. I'm just going to confess something right now. Ever since Audrey left, I've always felt like I've really missed having sort of the straight person to play against my craziness. And so it's
hey,
great.
Hey, who are
to
you calling
that.
Straight?
I don't mean that way. All right, maybe the roles are going to be reversed. I'm not good at being the straight guy. Well, anyway, Rebecca, since you're co-host for this week, you get to tell our listeners what's on for the episode.
This week, as part of Seller Success Month, we'll hear from eBay Senior Product Manager, B2C, Seller Experience, Lucan McGrindle. And he will be here to provide insights on Terapeak, especially for the seller who is new to eBay or who has never tried it. Terapeak is the ultimate research tool that uses an extensive database of current and past sales to help a seller determine ideal pricing points and trends.
And we'll also meet our next 25 seller stories for 25 years of eBay. Her name is Julie Yu. She's located in Toronto. And I got to tell you, Julie's story is a really good one, and you won't want to miss it.
Sounds like a good one.
Yeah.
So, Griff, at the end of the episode, we are going to be announcing a contest for our 100th episode next week. The details are at the end of the podcast, but don't fast forward out there. You'll miss all the good stuff.
Yeah, don't, please. Anyway, Rebecca, shall we just begin?
Yes. Up next, Terapeak.
This month, the month of July, is Seller Success Month, and this week we focus on one of the several tools you can find in a seller success toolbox, and that is Terapeak. A few episodes ago, Vice President of Seller Experience Harry Temkin spoke about Terapeak, but from an experience perspective, today we want to introduce Terapeak to those sellers who may have never used it before but are curious to know how it can help them sell. And to help with the introduction to Terapeak, what it is and how it can help you sell more successfully, we have with us right now Senior Product Manager of B2C Seller Experience, Lucan McRandall. Welcome, Lucan.
Thanks, Griff. I'm really happy to be here today.
And we're happy to have you. Now, I want to warn you, I'll be playing the part of proxy for those sellers who've never used Terapeak before. So first, what is Terapeak, Lucan? I've heard about it, but I haven't used it.
It's a common question that I hear. It's a relatively new product to the eBay ecosystem. But Terapeak has actually been around for about 10 years now at this point. And prior to 2017, it existed as its own product that was really meant to help sellers answer one of three questions. The first being, I have a product and how should I list it? Within that question, there are many different questions that a seller might ask. How should I price my product? What kind of policies would I want to include in it? What kind of keywords should I include in the listing title or description to attract buyers? The second question, though, overall that it helps sellers answer is, I have the opportunity to source a product. Is it worth my time? And lastly, sellers who don't have an opportunity on hand and don't have a product to sell might also use Terapeak to help them figure out what they should source to help them ensure that they're sourcing and listing products that buyers want going forward.
Okay, as a new seller, I would say this sounds very intriguing, Lucan, but I've been using search for sold items on eBay. How is Terapeak different?
A lot of sellers do use the search page to look for sold items that have sold in the past 90 days or so. And this can be helpful, especially if you're just getting started. There's a lot that you can glean from products that have sold in the very recent past. But one of the benefits to Terapeak is that we make this process much more easy for sellers who want to consume a lot of information. If you're only interested in selling a pair of sneakers that you don't want or don't need, and you'd rather get rid of them through a third-party site like eBay, then the search results page might be for you. It might be able to give you the information that you need. If I am a professional seller and I'm listing in large quantities, though, it becomes kind of exhausting to scroll through a lot of the search result page results that we get. That information isn't summarized at any level. So if you really want to get a good sample of listings out there to see how they've transacted, you'll have to scroll through multiple pages. You'll have to infer a lot from individual listings that you see. Terapeak makes this process a lot easier because of the way our user experience is designed. We present a lot more information in a bit more condensed space, summarizing that information into columns that you can sort so that you can easily identify top performing listings that have sold both in the recent past and over the last 365 days. So not only do you get that improvement in the amount of data we have available, but it's also easier to consume. And I guess the last thing I'd say about it too is that for sellers who have to consume a lot of this information in bulk, we also aggregate that information in top level metrics that show you the average sales price or the price range of listings that match your search, as well as things like the sell-through rate and what percentage of listings provide free shipping. And all of this can be used to help you make decisions about how to list that product going forward, hopefully much more quickly than you would be able to using the search results page.
All right. So you've convinced me that I should try to use Terapeak. How do I find Terapeak? How do I start using it?
Yeah, that's a good question. Terapeak is located in the Seller Hub, and it's specifically embedded under a tab called the Research tab. And this is where we direct sellers who want to learn more about various products on eBay, how to improve the products that they've already listed, what kind of products that they may want to source going forward. And it seems like the most natural fit for the Terapeak product as a whole because of its benefits as a product research tool. As long as you have access to the Seller Hub and you have an active Terapeak subscription, you'll be able to access it under the Research tab, and you'll be able to use it in an unlimited capacity.
What if I don't use Seller Hub? Can I still access Terapeak?
As of right now, it's only accessible from the Seller Hub. I think that the Seller Hub is a really valuable tool. It serves as a multi-use product that presents information to sellers in a dashboard format so that they can keep track of everything that's happening within their business. It allows you to manage your currently active listings. It allows you to manage your currently active orders. It helps when it comes to determining how to market your listings on eBay. And it gives you the ability to oversee your business in granular levels of detail. If you don't use Seller Hub today, that's okay, but I highly encourage sellers to at least try the Seller Hub out. If you do have a subscription to Terapeak, you'll be able to get access through the Seller Hub. But that said, I think it is in our interest to explore providing sellers who don't access the Seller Hub with some ingress point to Terapeak in the future.
Oh, okay.
So keep your eyes open for that.
Oh, that's good to know. Well, my last question is, how much does this all cost?
I'd mentioned a couple of times that Terapeak requires a subscription. The easiest way to get a subscription to Terapeak is actually to subscribe to a seller store. In all of the regions where Terapeak's supported, a seller store subscription of basic level or above will get you access to Terapeak as part of that package with no extra cost. If I am in the US, however, or if I have an account on eBay.com, I can also subscribe to an individual subscription either on a monthly or a yearly basis. The monthly plan is about $19 per month, and the yearly plan breaks down to about $12 per month, $144 for the year.
Yeah, well, for that money, I might as well just get an eBay store and get it for free with all the other store benefits.
Yeah, I think that's the best deal, honestly. It gives you a lot of power for what you pay for.
Well, this was great. I think I have a better understanding as a proxy seller about exactly what Terapeak is. But I'm going to want to learn more about this. I would love to have been able to see like examples of how I can use this, both maybe from my basic understanding and then thinking ahead when a more advanced use of TerraPeak. Do you think that would be possible?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm always ready to show off the product. I think there's a lot of value to be gained from it. And I think that a lot of our audience listening today would probably benefit from a quick walkthrough of the product. So I'm very happy to present that going forward.
Okay, so it's a deal. We can't really do visuals very well on the podcast, but we can use Zoom to record a video and have a more in-depth visual look into this. We'll do that next week, and we'll actually have that up on the site. I want to thank you, Lucan, for stopping by.
Yeah, no problem. This is great, Griff. I'm always happy to stop by and join you on the show. And I'm really glad that I was able to speak to some of your listeners today.
And you'll speak to them again. We'll meet up next week and we'll set a time for doing a video so we can get an in-depth visual look at this.
Great.
Lucan McRandall is Senior Product Manager of B2C Seller Experience. Now, as I said, stay tuned to the eBay for Business video channels, both on YouTube and Facebook, for a more in-depth visual view, both basic and advanced, on how to use TerraPeak, and that'll be coming up later this week. Our next guest was one of the 25 sellers whose story was selected for the 25 Stories for 25 Years of eBay project. Julie Yu is an eBay seller who, well, wait a minute, why am I saying who she is? Why don't we let Julie tell her story? Welcome, Julie.
Hi, how are you?
Great. It's so good for you to join us. And before we start, I want everyone to know your user ID, and I'll tell you why, because people who are listening near a computer, they're going to rush and look at your eBay store. So if you don't mind, what is your eBay user ID?
Absolutely. It's I Miss You Vintage.
I Miss You Vintage. How long have you been selling on eBay?
I joined eBay, believe it or not, back in October of 1998. More than 20 years.
That's a long time ago. I can barely remember. Remember, so you were one of the first wave of sellers on the site.
Yeah.
Prior to having your own business on eBay, what was your main interest before you got started?
Before I signed on to eBay, I was a student studying art history and fine art studio. So I was very into art, architecture, design, history, and all of that sort of eventually led into my career path into fashion.
When you started off majoring in art history, was your goal to have that be your career, to be working in art history itself? Did you think of fashion beforehand?
I always liked fashion, but always considered it a hobby. I didn't think that it was going to be a career that I went into. Otherwise, I would have gone to fashion school, but I was always very into art. I thought maybe I'd work at an auction house, have my own show about art history, or work at art galleries or museums.
You finished school, you got your degree.
Yes.
And then what happened?
I was selling on eBay as I was a student, so it helped sort of fund my schooling, and it was a hobby that I did on the side. And as I was thrifting, finding treasures, I also worked at an antique mall part-time. It was the best place to sort of see what came through there and what things were selling for and for what value. So if I saw something that was priced a little lower, you know, maybe I'd pick it up, sell it on eBay, and so begins the buying and selling. And I quickly began to amass a large inventory of things that, you know, take over your spare room, they take over the attic, take over the basement, and all of a sudden, you've got racks of clothes and bags and purses, and people say, you need to open a store. So in 2005, I took that leap and opened my own retail store, Bricks and Mortar.
Where is this store located? And is it still in existence?
Yeah, this July marks 15 years of that store, which is, I'd say, a very long time for a Bricks and Mortar store.
Yes.
And we're located in Toronto, Ontario, on Ossington Avenue. And it's sort of in a very trendy, up-and-coming shopping district.
Now, you've had customers come and go over the last 15 years in your brick and mortar store. Do you have longtime customers who started buying from you back then who still buy from you today?
Absolutely. We're a very community-based, small boutique store. And so we have a lot of locals that come. And obviously, with resale, we're getting new merchandise every day. So we have regulars that pop in a few times a week just to see what they can find.
What is your favorite period of fashion that you sell in your store?
Currently, we sell contemporary designer resale. So it's only within a few seasons old. People buy things, decide it's not for them, and they consign it with us and resale it. But when I first started, I dealt exclusively with vintage historical fashions. So we were selling things from the 20s, 70s, 60s, and it was more era specific. And I think early on at that time period, I was very in love with the 20s.
Yes.
I would love watching black and white movies. Even later on in the 30s and 40s with film noir, and I would look at all of their wardrobe. And we would find dresses that look like that. And you'd imagine you were that 40s jazz singer wearing that sequin dress.
Looking like Rita Hayworth and Gilda.
Exactly.
Taking the gloves off. Right. What happened to that trend? Does it still exist? I know you've moved into more recent contemporary fashion, but is there still a market, a viable market for era clothing from the 20s, 30s, 70s? And if so, what made you move into contemporary?
Absolutely. It's a thriving field. And I've even had employees who worked for me back then that were completely, I would say, lifestyle 50s. They lived in houses that looked 50s, drove 50s car, dressed head to toe. One of the women I can think of is currently a vintage hairdresser and puts her hair in curlers every night to look like she's from the 50s. There's quite a thriving scene for that look, and there is a demand. However, for myself, I did find that it was very niche and specific. So when you're trying to pay rent in a gentrified area and continue on with a volume-based model, I think moving into contemporary clothing sort of appealed to a wider mass for me at the time.
Right. And it's probably easier to find the inventory.
Yes. And especially that we're consignment now, we have women who clean their closets out and bring things to us. Whereas back then, you'd have to have that estate score or somebody who phoned you because your great aunt left behind their closet.
Yeah, exactly. I remember early on in my thrifting history back in the 80s in Vermont when I lived there, that no one wanted 40s and 50s men's clothing. So I was able to scarf as much of it up as possible. And then I remember it was within less than a month, I went in and suddenly the prices had gone way up and there were competitors. And I thought, well, this is a field it's time for me to get out of. So I suppose you went through the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. Although I'm interested to see those 40s clothes.
Well, they're all gone. I've sold them.
Yeah.
And plus I gained a lot of weight since then. So the ones I wore, I can't wear anymore. There weren't a lot of heavy guys back in the 40s and 50s, at least when it came to finding clothing. How does your sourcing change? So you moved from more vintage era clothing and fashion into contemporary. Does that change how you source your product?
Absolutely. We're no longer thrifting. We don't have time for that to score that unique treasure. But we do have an established clientele, obviously, after 15 years, some real fashionistas that are local, that they shop constantly and they need to cycle through their closets and wardrobe. And we really help with that so that we can bring their wardrobe back into the circular economy.
Do you focus on women's fashion or do you cover women's and men's?
We have two stores that are located beside each other, and one is women's and one is men's. And in the beginning, it was a bit of an experiment to open a men's side, and I didn't think it would have that much reception, but you'd be surprised. There's men that really like to shop and have lots of merchandise to bring in. Yep.
I'm known as the San Jose Imelda Marcos when it comes to shoes, so I know exactly what you mean. When you first started off with eBay, and I know a lot of sellers who I've talked to even back then, it wasn't as easy getting started on eBay as it is today. I think it really was an uphill climb for a lot of people. Did you have help setting up your eBay account and your eBay store and your eBay business?
It was 1998, so it was very long ago and really hazy. But I do recall it was just a matter of choosing a username, picking a password, and so I feel like it was very easy.
Oh, it was easy. Okay, well then you were one of those customers that I never was able to assist because you never emailed customer support saying, this is difficult. Which is good. That's a great thing to know. As an old antique dealer myself and somebody who remembers fondly the treasures he found and sold and wishes he could have back, can you recall any early fashion treasures or even collectibles that you found and then sold on eBay?
Oh, there's so many. One of the questions I've recently been asked is, what is the first item you sold on eBay? It's hard to remember, but I do recall back then I would be thrifting, let's say, vintage rhinestone brooches for $3.99 and selling them on eBay for, let's say, $65. And then, of course, recently we've graduated to selling rare Hermes Birkins, fine jewelry in the tens of thousands of dollars. So there's been quite a few treasures that have passed through our hands over the years.
Do you have consigners who actually bring their Birkin bags into you?
Oh, absolutely. We get dozens of them annually.
Now, is that a challenge for you to sell? I know that for some sellers selling high-end fashion like that, there's always the question of authenticity. How do you handle that?
We use a technology that removes that authenticity barrier, and we provide a pre-certified form with it. And we always stand by authenticity, of course. And we know our clients. They don't just come in from the street. When there's a client that brings you 10 Birkin bags, you know who that is, and you know the provenance and who they are and how they like to shop.
Yeah. 10 Birkin bags. I think I'd faint if so. That's a lot of money. I mean, I think the cheapest Birkin bag I think that you can buy is at least new is at least $10,000 or $15,000.
That's right.
Wow. Well, Julie, you're a success. Was your business always solely, well, it wasn't always solely on eBay, but you still run two businesses then. You have your consignment stores, you have two stores that are mostly consignment, but how do you manage that, selling on eBay and then having those two brick and mortar stores? That sounds like a lot of work.
It is, and I think selling online, it wasn't always consistent. We started off in the beginning just selling online prior to having a store. And then when I had a store, I admit a lot of things did sell in our heavily foot trafficked retail store. So it's a lot of effort to also then mirror that online. But recently, we've been trying to be omnichannel, and we're online and in store. So people can look at things from home and find the same things online.
Yeah.
Everything is online right now, so which is quite... Yeah.
You have systems now to prevent like duplications or double sales so that you can manage that end of it. That's always what I find to be really difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. Syncing inventory is a real challenge when you have multiple channels. There's a lot of great apps, and even the eBay app, when things sell on our website, it automatically removes it. So technology is a great help. But sometimes, yes, there's human error, but we always try to keep inventory in sync.
Of course. You're located in Canada. Is cross-border trade a big part of your business?
Cross-border trade has always been a big part of my business. When I first started selling on eBay, and even for many years in, actually, I don't think I had a single national sale within Canada. And it was quite fascinating for me to have buyers from Russia, Japan, Hong Kong, and of course, a lot of the major US cities, you know, like New York and California states, sorry. And it's more recent that we've had a lot of Canadian buyers, which is great because then you're reaching the homes of national buyers. But international export has always been one of the beauties of e-commerce, yeah, that you're opening your business to the world.
And you must have wondered why that was the case early on. Once you must have opened your store in 2005, you obviously have local clients. But prior to that, was there any reason that you can think of that Canadians, or at least your fellow Canadians, weren't buying from your store in the same rate that international buyers were?
I think when you're selling unique, one-of-a-kind vintage items, you're looking out for that specific collector or somebody who's looking for that item. And who knows, there's somebody out in Japan who's specifically looking for that brand of jewelry. Or another thing that also comes to mind, I think, is just the difference in market value, whereas our dollar is worth something, and to them, maybe our price looks very cheap. So it's more of a bargain for them.
Yeah.
The difference in currency, I think, and that works to our advantage. When I first started on eBay as a Canadian, I was being paid in US dollars, and that was fantastic.
Yes.
Because we were making at that time 40 to 60% more than our dollar.
But that's changed, I think, recently.
Yeah, I think we're the Canadian dollar sinking. But yeah, we do list in Canadian now as well. So
they're roughly
we're getting at par.
I think they're at parity right about now. We give or take a few cents. I haven't checked.
The US is still a little more.
Yeah.
It's still quite a little more. But yeah. It's always nice to tap into other markets and currencies if they work to your advantage.
Exactly. Yeah. When you started out, almost 22 years ago that you started on eBay, but prior to that, did you imagine yourself always in some sort of entrepreneurship as a small business owner?
Absolutely not. Even in school, my favorite subjects were music and art, and I always considered myself a creative, and I would avoid classes like business and politics, and I never thought of myself as a business person. So if you had told me back then that I would have been an entrepreneur, I was very shocked. However, one thing I've learned from that is that being an entrepreneur requires creativity, and business is creative, and it requires a resilience that oftentimes you have to think on your feet, and that is creativity. So that surprised me in being able to find that in myself.
Right. So you have become a business person over time.
Yes.
I'm glad you mentioned that bit about creativity, because I think the most successful people in business on any level tap into an inner creativity that they either weren't aware of or had maybe an inkling of. And then it has to become a big component of how you run your business, or else you get swamped by the competition. Just competing is a form of creativity.
That's true.
Hey, if there was a new seller that came up to you in your shop and said, hey, I'm thinking of starting on eBay, and I hear you've been on there for 22 years. You don't have to give me everything that you know, but what starting out advice would you give me as a new eBay seller?
Well, first I'd say great. It's fantastic. You should get online right now, especially with what's going on in the world. More and more people are shopping online. They're going online to get their goods within the comfort of their own home. And as a retail business, if you're not online, you're being left behind. So that's fantastic that you're online. Secondly, I'd say tap into all of the tools that eBay provides to help. To build your business, you want to first drive traffic. You want to grow your brand. You want to increase your revenue. And what we've found is the more you list online, the more you sell.
It's true, isn't it? So if you're just listing 10 or 20 items, you're not going to be really doing that well.
That's right.
How many items do you tend to have up on eBay on average?
At least several hundred.
Wow, several hundred. Okay, so that's a goal. If you're going to be a new seller and you're really thinking about doing this as a business, is don't stop at 10, 20, 50, or even a few hundred. Think about several hundred. Think about that as your goal in order to make it a viable business.
Yeah, that's right. And another thing is it's fun and it's really addictive.
Yes.
Checking your listings, seeing how many people viewed them.
It is. I know. Even I do it after all these years. I don't sell nearly as much as you do, but I still find the same sort of excitement that happened back 25 years ago when I started and 22 years ago when you started. It was exciting. And if you're keeping up on all the trends and all the tools, it can still be exciting for you as well. Julie, is there anything else you want to say to our sellers before we sign off?
No, and nothing comes to mind, but thank you for having me on. And I really enjoyed talking.
Well, it's been a pleasure to have you on, and continued success with your business. I'd love to check in with you again in maybe 6 months or so and see how things are going. I know that this is really a difficult time in many ways. There's opportunities in retail during something as huge as a pandemic. Who knows what's going to happen 6 months from now? Would you mind if we checked in with you again?
No, please do. I look forward to it.
And if we're ever in Toronto, I'll stop in both shops, men and women's.
Oh, it's so hot here today. It's like the South.
Oh, you're kidding. No, it's always... Yeah. Oh, that. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. I know that it gets humid. That's not fun. Well, Julie, I'll let you go. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you so much.
Now, you can read more about Julie Yu and her eBay story and her store, which is I Miss You Vintage. You can check it out on eBay. And also, her story is going to be on the eBay Inc. blog at www.ebayinc.com. You've got questions and we've got answers.
This is exciting. My first time with Seller Questions live on the podcast. And remember, you can also send your questions or comments to us at 888-723-4630 or at podcast@ebay.com. Mm-hmm. All right, Griff, what's our first question?
Well, Rebecca, we have a really good question that was posted on the Facebook group page for the podcast. And I'll put a link to that page in the transcript so you can find it. Now, on that page, seller Elaine Wilkin asked, I sent some offers and one of my items had a larger quantity. One buyer wants to buy four items, but the listing is only allowing him to purchase one for the discounted price that I sent him. What is the easiest way to allow him to buy four at my discounted price?
And what's the answer?
Well, Rebecca, this one wasn't easy because I got to confess, I didn't know the answer off the top of my head, but I don't know. Do you know the answer?
Actually, I don't. So I'm really interested to hear what you found out, Griff.
I had to do a lot of research. And what I had to do is actually create a multi-quantity fixed price listing and then play with it to see how it worked. And then I had to actually go and check and see if a seller has sent me this. And they had recently. They sent me an offer. And here's what I found out. A seller cannot set a quantity when they are the ones sending an offer to a buyer. However, a buyer can select a quantity when they're sending a best offer for a multi-quantity listing to a seller. Who knew? So, not sure why it's set up that way. There may be a reason. I should ask the team. But in the meantime, I figured out a workaround. So, if you're in this situation as a seller and you want to send an offer to a buyer for a multi-quantity listing, tell the buyer who accepts your offer for this one item, but they indicate that they want to buy more at that price, tell them to accept the first offer and pay for it. Then have him send you a best offer from that same listing for the same discounted price and have him select the quantity he wants to buy. So if he wanted four originally, have him select three because he already purchased one at the discount price. And then you as the seller accept the offer once he sent it. Then wait for him to pay if you don't use immediate payment, And once all of those transactions are paid, you can combine them when you're printing a shipping label for these sales. So you can put them all in one box. There you go.
Well, that's not the most elegant solution, but it works.
Yeah,
and you know, Griff, this is a great example of why it's amazing that you do sell a lot here on eBay, so that you can go and try things and figure out answers to be able to tell everyone out there in podcast land.
Except that after I actually posted that, there were a few sellers who said, yeah, we do that all the time. So what else is new?
Well, at least we know that it works.
It works, exactly. And there were several other sellers, like I said, who posted to that thread with their versions of that solution and maybe and some other suggestions. Brian and I talked about this when I first saw this. And one of the interesting things was, why would the team build it that way? And then thinking it through, we thought, I bet it's because of the complexity. So if you're sending an offer, you have no idea if that buyer is interested in one or more. And if you send it for four, the buyer could say, well, you know what? I don't want four. So I'm just going to ignore this. So it's probably a great way to get started. There may be a better product solution, but in the meantime, that's how it works.
You know, I think what we should do is send this feedback off to the product team so that at least they're aware that this question is out there.
I'm on it, boss. I'll do that.
It's great to know that other sellers posted to that thread with their suggestions, and you can read those on the eBay for Business podcast Facebook group page at facebook.com/groups/eBay for Business podcast.
Yeah, and again, we'll put that URL in the episode transcript.
So what's our next question?
Well, Rebecca, we also received a question recently at podcast@ebay.com in that mailbox, and it's short and sweet. I'll read it to you. Hello, Griff. This is Alex, and my store name is Pit Stop Auto, and we sell automotive replacement parts. We're trying to upload an Excel file in order to update our store category listings so that some of our listings aren't categorized as other. Is there a way for us to upload multiple product categories, subcategories from a CSV file so that we don't have to manually type each category as we have a lot of products? Thank you, Alex Pivek. And I'm going to let you answer this. I think you might know the answer.
So I think I know the answer to this one. Alex, you definitely want to check out eBay's File Exchange application. Now, this is going to be a little complicated, so go with me here. File Exchange is for high volume sellers who need to upload and manage listings in bulk. Using templates, you can create and upload inventory CSV files to add, revise, relist, and end listings. You can also perform post-sales tasks, such as leaving feedback or identifying items that have been paid for or posted. So you can upload the files to eBay in two different ways. The first way is interactively from your account page, and the second way is automatically using scripts. File Exchange processes your data files, runs the actions you requested, and creates a downloadable report of all of the actions taken. It usually takes a few hours, though really large files can take a bit longer. You can find the link for File Exchange in this episode's transcript, or search Google for eBay File Exchange. You know, I wish we had short vanity URLs for these pages, Griff, but yeah. I'm going to read this one off.
Okay, I'm all ears. Go ahead.
Okay, so it is https://. BulkSell, that's BulkSell /WS/, and this is all one phrase, eBay ISAPI .DLL? File Exchange Center. Ooh, that's a mouthful. Listen, listeners, I recommend that you just look for the transcript and find the link in there. That'll be much easier.
We should ask the team to create a vanity URL for that one.
We should.
You know, and there's another solution besides File Exchange, Rebecca, although it's not really well known by many sellers. So, Alex, you may also want to explore the eBay Merchant Integration Platform, or MIP. Sellers who, like you, who have stock keeping units, SKUs, or custom label-based inventory may prefer to use eBay Merchant's integration platform. It's another bulk management tool for high-volume sellers. The service makes it really easy to turn your inventory into really great eBay listings. All you have to do is upload a CSV or XML file to your list of products. It can help you manage your eBay inventory, and you can also use it to fulfill orders. Now, to learn more and to sign up for MIP, and any seller can do this, you don't have to be a big merchant, go to https://mip.ebay.com. And as always, we'll put that link, even though it's a short one, in the episode transcript. And you can visit that transcript by going to www.ebay.com/podcast and then find and click the link for episode 99 and then click the link for transcript. And now, drum roll please, for the special contest we teased at the start of the episode. As you know, next week is our 100th episode.
Wow, that's amazing, Griff.
Oh, I can hardly believe it.
So we thought it would be a great time to get some audience participation. Even though it's only a week away, we want to do a contest. It's really easy to enter. If there was a tip or suggestion or a bit of seller advice that listeners heard in an episode or segment over the last 2 years that really helped with their eBay selling or made them a more confident seller and it made an impression, tell us. We want to hear that story.
Yeah, we do. And you can call it in at 888-723-4630. Leave a voice message with your best bit of advice from the past show.
Or you can email it to podcast@ebay.com if you're a shy person or you don't like phones.
Shy person like me. And the first 10 sent in or called in comments based on date and timestamp will receive some cool eBay podcast swag from our podcast swag boxes back on campus up on the third floor of Building 6.
We have to admit, we're not quite sure what's in those boxes since it's been months since we were in the office. But we guarantee that you'll like what we give as prizes. I think it's hoodies and t-shirts pretty much at this point.
Yes. Plus, I think there's some other bonus stuff that I can't remember right off the top of my head, but I know where it is. I think I can find it, I think.
You sound skeptical.
No. Actually, I was there last week. I went in to pick up some personal stuff, and we still have lots of those cool purple t-shirts and hoodies with the podcast logo, that mic on them. People really like those.
A hoodie, right? Everyone loves a hoodie.
Especially you're in San Francisco and it's in the middle of summer.
Exactly. Okay. So remember, the first 10 emails or calls to our hotline at 888-723-4630. Or email box podcast@ebay.com with your favorite bit of selling advice or memory from the podcast. We'll get that bit of swag, which could be a hoodie or a t-shirt or something special that Griff rustles up in the building.
Yeah, somebody else's laptop. Something really special. Oh, I think they'll like this laptop.
Exactly. Well, that's a joke, folks. No laptops in this contest.
God, we could get in a lot of trouble. Oh, yeah.
Anyway, that's it for this week. This has really been fun.
I think it's been fun, too. You know, Rebecca, you're a natural. You should really be a regular co-host on the podcast more often.
Okay, certainly. So long as Brian doesn't mind me stepping into his territory.
I'm certain he won't. He's a really nice guy.
It's true. Well, then you can count on me. And if you out there have an eBay selling question for us, call it in at 888-723-4630.
That's 888-723-4630, and it may sound like it, but this is not a fundraiser. We just want your questions. And the best part, if you call it in now, you'll get the free PBS tote bag. No. You can call that hotline at any time of day, any day of the week. Leave a question or comment, and if it's appropriate, we'll put it on the air.
And if you're not a call-on-the-phone person, you can always email us at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com. You know, Griff, I think we should make up podcast tote bags. I love this idea.
I was just thinking, what could be better during a pandemic than a tote bag?
I love
it. You can put all your PPP. Wait a minute. We should make podcast PPEs, masks with the mic in the... Oh, I'm going to get right on this. I'm going to do this.
Okay, I get the first one.
You get the first one.
Okay. Yes.
In the meantime, don't forget your daily podcast to-do list.
Check the announcement board for up-to-date seller news.
And remember, if you've received your invite for managed payments, you got to make sure you register ASAP. And don't forget to visit the new managed payments fee page at www.ebay.com/simpler-fees.
Check out the transcript for this and all episodes for follow-up on what you've heard and to see the links that we referenced during this episode.
And on our next episode, we'll have more seller success tips and another seller story from that project. But we're also going to talk with Hazel Mitchell from eBay's customer support team. She's located in Dublin. She's going to call in and talk to us about the phone support process for customers, buyers, and sellers alike, during the pandemic.
We'd like to again thank our guests for this week, Senior Product Manager, B2C Seller Experience, Lucan McRandall, and eBay seller, Julie Yu, who sells on eBay under the user ID, I Miss You Vintage.
The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411.